This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide by simplifying the selling online and in person so you can successfully grow your business. Shopify will cover all your sales channels and get you selling across social media marketplaces like TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook. Full of the industry-leading tools ready to ignite your growth, Shopify gives you complete control over your business and your brand without learning new skills in design or coding. And thanks to 24/7 help and with an extensive business course library, Shopify is ready to support your success every step of the way. I remember a hustle I set up a few years ago. It was so difficult to actually sell the product and get paid. Changing the prices, I sit hours at my computer when I need to be working on my sales and marketing strategy. A friend recommended Shopify and it completely transformed the business. It just made everything really straightforward. And what I love about Shopify is that no matter how big you want to grow, it will be there to empower you with the confidence and control to take your business to the next level. It's time to get serious about selling and get Shopify today. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/truecrime, all lowercase. Go to shopify.co.uk/truecrime to take your business to the next level today. shopify.co.uk/truecrime. Hello and welcome to episode 386 of the UK True Crime Podcast. I'm Adam. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. This week our story is from the Midlands and it's a story of two people who would not normally have met if they'd not both been going through somewhat challenging times and this pushed them together. And once again, it's a sad tale of unfulfilled promise. Before we begin, let's quickly set some context for our guest of the month and year game. Ready? Top of the UK music charts, it was Blinding Lights from The Weeknd. Drake with Toosie Slide was in the US top spot. And in Australia, number one on the album charts was Violent Soho with Everything Is A-OK. In the news this month, Queen Elizabeth made an address to the nation and the wider Commonwealth. For only the fifth time in her 66-year reign, she used those words, "We will meet again." In the UK, Prime Minister Johnson was admitted to hospital with COVID. Keir Starmer was elected leader of the Labour Party, succeeding Jeremy Corbyn, with Angela Rayner elected as deputy. And in the UK this month, clothing brands Oasis and Warehouse both closed, with the loss of almost 2,000 jobs after going to administration. Notable deaths included Tim Brooke Taylor of the Goodies fame at age 78 and Leeds United's legendary player Norman Hunter at 76. So did you guess the month and year? It was April 2020, just 4 years ago, but with COVID back then it was a very different world. But hey, at least the world has settled down into a new era of peace after the disruption to our way of life after the COVID shock. On with today's story. The body cam footage is dramatic on that late May evening in 2020. Police have been called to a car driving erratically, close to a quarry near Colford in the Forest of Dean. If you know it, the quarry entrance is near the B4136, which is the main road linking the Forest of Dean to Wales in the Wye Valley. It was a time of COVID lockdown, the first lockdown, when there were so few cars on the road, which is why a member of the public had decided to call the police after seeing this one car driving erratically. Body cam footage captures police confronting a woman who'd been in that car on the 12th of May 2020, with officers locating her beside the quarry late at night. It was almost 11 p.m. Nearby were two large suitcases. The woman clearly didn't want the officers to look in the suitcases, but the officers weren't having any of that. I mean, why was she there, almost at midnight, near an old quarry, with two suitcases? They warned her that she faced being arrested for obstruction. She's heard saying, "Look, I don't want to stop you guys," to which the police say, "You are stopping us," as they guide her away from the two suitcases. The woman is clearly very uncomfortable, and the police block her path to stop her walking back towards them as one officer opens one of the bags. There's an audible, sharp exhale of breath at what he can see before the officer says in both horror and astonishment, "What the fuck?" The officers had found the dismembered body of 28-year-old Phoenix Netz. Phoenix had grown up in London, having been born in Croydon, South London, to parents Mark and Saskia. She was the granddaughter of music photographer Barry Wenzel, who may well be known to you, as back in the day he was pretty well known for his celebrity pictures of bands such as Jimi Hendrix and also the Beatles in their prime. As a girl, Phoenix was very much into horses, and she had dreams of helping others by being a paramedic. She was bright, curious and well liked. But like for so many of us in life, things didn't go quite to plan. Joe met Phoenix at the University in Canterbury in Kent. Phoenix was there between 2009 and 2011, but she didn't graduate. The pair dated for a while, and it was during this time that Joe learnt more about the very difficult early life that Phoenix had experienced. She told him that before university, she got into drugs and dated a dealer, starting off with regularly smoking marijuana, before she started taking acid, cocaine and MDMA. And she'd suffered a terrible sexual assault. Joe said, "She told me and one other friend of hers that she'd been raped by a drug dealer." Phoenix was kind and quiet, but also vulnerable. She didn't have a great childhood after her parents had split up. She used to love Louis Theroux documentaries, and I remember her joking about getting a t-shirt saying, "We're going to get Theroux this." Joe continued, "I was ignorant to people's mental health at the time, so I wouldn't have been able to analyse then as I can now. But she seemed damaged, and rightly so, by the trauma that she'd been through. I don't know which way her life went after we split up. She certainly never expressed any interest in kids or getting married." Phoenix mostly lived in the past and a little in the moment. She spent the majority of the time stoned. She barely ate anything. I'm not sure if that was linked to post-traumatic stress disorder. She was vulnerable and clearly experienced a dark side of the world that not many people would realise is there, but she still showed compassion and empathy to others. After leaving Kent, it seems that Phoenix spent some time with her aunt in the Midlands and having a serious relationship there, and when that broke up, she moved to a hostel in Birmingham at the end of 2019. It was here that she lived next door to 28-year-old Garicha Conita Gordon. The two had initially got on well, but for Phoenix, this was just being good friends, and that was all she wanted and needed. But as time went on, they knew each other about 6 months. Gordon clearly wanted more, and she was pushing hard, very hard, for a sexual relationship with Phoenix, in which Phoenix had no interest whatsoever. In February of 2020, Phoenix had told a friend that Gordon had, I quote, demanded sex with her and became aggressive when she said no. Then on April the 7th, Phoenix sent a text message to a friend stating, "There's a girl here who keeps asking me to be sexual. I think I'm going to move back to London. It's scaring me, lol." Later analysis of Gordon's phone seemed to back this up. Gordon made a call to the Samaritans on April the 11th, in which she appeared more than a little tipsy. The clear focus of this call was Gordon describing that she really liked another woman who lived near her and she wanted to have sex with her. At one stage during this call, Gordon referred to this woman she fancied and said that either her loins were warming up or were very hot. Gordon told the call handler that she would be direct with the woman in a bid to have sex with her. The last known contact that Phoenix had with any of her friends or family was a phone call with a friend in the early hours of April the 16th. This same friend attempted to ring Phoenix back that afternoon, but he couldn't get through. The woman found with the suitcases by the police was Gordon, and she was taken into custody. When questioned at first, she responded no comment to all the questions put to her about just what had happened to Phoenix. She later did confess to murder, just days before she stood trial. But by then, detectives were very clear just what had happened to Phoenix. A post-mortem found she had suffered 4 stab wounds to the front of her torso. 1 injury was to her right lung, 2 and 3 wounds were caused to her liver and stomach, and the 4th wound was to her breastbone. Detectives believed that this had happened when she'd invited Gordon to her room on the 16th of April, just as friends. Although the motive for the murder appeared to be sexual, during the attack, Gordon did not sexually assault Phoenix. Distressingly though, the stab wounds she inflicted would not have been fatal if Gordon had asked for medical assistance promptly. But instead, she did nothing. She watched as the life ebbed from her friend Phoenix. Phoenix's last hours on this earth must have been utterly terrifying. Too badly injured to get help, but conscious enough to know just how seriously she was injured, and also that Gordon wasn't going to help her. Although the post-mortem couldn't say exactly when Phoenix was stabbed on that day, another woman living in the hostel heard noises of drilling and banging, as well as shouts of, "Help me, help me," on April the 16th. And it seems that Gordon had used Phoenix's phone to carry out a number of internet searches on that day, around the time she was likely to have been killed, between 1:04 p.m. and 3:07 p.m. These searches included how to fix a punctured lung, internal bleeding, and can someone recover from getting stabbed. Forensic experts found that Gordon had tried to cover her tracks by removing the bed, mattress, carpet and underlay. But as we know, removing all traces of a crime is incredibly difficult, and bloodstaining was found in the living area, the kitchen and the shower. Gordon had no previous convictions for murder, just petty theft. There were 2 shoplifting convictions on her record. But she certainly seemed to be thinking very clearly, as the very next morning she bought a circular saw on Gumtree for £45, and this was delivered to her just before 11 a.m. on the 17th of April. The post-mortem found that, to quote the coroner, dismemberment took place at 5 different locations of the body, dividing the body into 6 parts, and this was done when Phoenix was either clothed or partially clothed. Now, even if you've seen films of someone being dismembered in fiction, or you've maybe thought about it, or you've read about it, heard it on podcasts, can you actually imagine the reality of buying a circular saw and then doing it? I think it's really hard to comprehend. Once that job had been completed, Gordon moved quickly, at first taking the body parts to West Bromwich for a few days, before making a number of trips via taxi to the Forest of Dean. She then hired another taxi to take the suitcases to the Colford area and took both trains and taxis between the 2 places. It's thought she'd buried the body in the forest at the time, and for a period of time she even lived rough in the forest, seemingly to be near the body. Then on May the 10th, 2020, she bought a petrol can from a petrol station in Birmingham. It was 2 days later when she filled it with petrol and called another taxi to take her to where she'd left the remains of Phoenix on the night she was caught by police. Detectives believe that as the torso was charred, she tried to set fire to the body on that evening, but when this wasn't successful, she put the remains in the suitcases. She had made plans to be picked up and taken over the border to Wales, just a few miles away, and a fire investigation dog found 1 location nearby where an accelerant had been used, and also the camp used by Gordon was discovered very close. It's all very macabre, isn't it? The reality of doing these things late at night in a forest. And the evidence continued to grow against Gordon, despite her no comment interviews. The circular saw used to dismember Phoenix's body was discovered in Gordon's room, along with detailed handwritten notes about her plans to move the body from Colford to Wales. There was 1 other note that was found by police from Gordon to Phoenix. It said, "I know it's not like you to not have sex. I can't give you what we want unless we fuck." CCTV footage showed Gordon dragging Phoenix's body in a suitcase outside the hostel where they lived. She was also seen buying cleaning supplies and a sleeping bag in a shop. As you can see, the evidence is staggering against her, so it isn't really a surprise. She eventually changed her story and admitted her guilt. You may think part of this was to save the family and friends from going through all the horrendous detail of the murder in a trial. But sadly, other aspects of her behaviour straight after the murder make this, I would suggest, highly unlikely. As she tried to give the impression to friends and family that Phoenix was all well and happy and had just moved to London. She contacted Phoenix's friends and family with texts, emails and voice calls from her mobile, pretending to be her and talking about her move to London. She went to great lengths to do this, even downloading an audio app, and this allowed her to edit some of Phoenix's voice messages, which she then sent via social media platforms to a number of people. Get this, she even impersonated Phoenix in a series of WhatsApps to Phoenix's mum, asking her to send her money. How bad is that? At Bristol Crown Court, the QC who represented Gordon announced that her mum had written a letter to the judge, saying that she was eternally sorry for what her daughter had done. In the very personal letter, she described Gordon as a ticking time bomb at the time of the murder, due to her mental state and her lack of support. It transpired that Gordon was born in Jamaica and had moved to England aged 7, living initially with an aunt before her mum joined her. She had gone to an all-girls school in North London, but it had been a pretty traumatic experience for her. She was bullied at school for her sexuality as well as her very poor English. And her sexuality caused her problems at home as well. Gordon's mum just wasn't accepting of her sexuality at all and kicked her out of the family home because of it. Her QC told how Gordon was later exploited by a much older man who turned her into a sex worker, and this was a very abusive relationship. And further assessments carried out on Gordon following the murder found she was suffering from a personality disorder, which meant that her ability to empathise with others is impaired. It also found she had a low tolerance to frustration and she struggled with perceived rejection. Her mum's letter concluded by saying, "Gordon is not a bad person at heart. If given the right environment and support, she can start to understand her condition and become more aware of how to manage it." The QC continued that Gordon's mother lives with the constant feeling that she could and should have done more. Gordon was sentenced to life in prison with a minimum term of 23 years and 6 months. The judge described Phoenix as a deeply loved person who was planning to move back to live with her parents in London at the time of her death, but she'd been delayed by coronavirus restrictions. Her future was looking bright, shining and promising. A fresh start was ahead of her. You robbed her of that fresh start. You took her from the supportive parents who loved and cherished her. The judge outlined that days before the murder, Gordon had demanded sex from Phoenix and become physically aggressive, pushing her around the room when she refused. She described Gordon as a very dangerous young woman, saying that none of the wounds would have been fatal if she'd called for help, but she'd refused to do so. And it may have been a staggering 12 hours before Phoenix actually died. She must have been very frightened in these hours, the judge said. And she concluded by saying that attempts to persuade other people that Phoenix was still alive was wicked and callous. Phoenix's dad, Mark, told the court that the pain experienced by the family after Phoenix's murder was exacerbated by the knowledge of the manner of her death and the defendant impersonating her. Our lives have been irreversibly changed and the anguish is indescribable. And Phoenix's mum, Saskia, described herself as forever devastated, forever empty. So what you're making what we've heard today, it's quite a story, isn't it? Now, if it wasn't for COVID, would Phoenix today have just been a missing person whose disappearance would always remain a mystery? After all, the taxi driver taking Gordon to the forest was only stopped as during the COVID restrictions, there had to be a very good reason to be out at night. I guess very few of us choose our neighbours, and if we're living in a hostel or other shared accommodation, we can often live very close to people whose background we know nothing about. We just don't know them at all. Phoenix and Gordon were both living in a hostel which was for people suffering challenging situations. In those environments, combined with the strangeness that was COVID lockdown, this could have had the effect of making Gordon seem more in the close relationship that she had developed with Phoenix. But even before the murder, to be sexually aggressive to the extent that Phoenix was ready to leave a city by all accounts she loved, Birmingham, is of course totally unacceptable. I don't want to downplay the horror of what happened on that terrible day, but in life we all have to get used to just not getting what we want, right? Why didn't Gordon just accept that the two wouldn't have that sort of relationship, but they could still be great friends? Once again, I just don't get the need for violence when you don't get your way, do you? I accept the note from her mum saying she struggles with rejection, but all the same. For her to have been friends with someone as lovely as Phoenix, she must have had some nice qualities. But I guess as time went on, her frustration at being rejected, this grew and led to aggression. But whatever the reason, she certainly has a long time in prison to ponder her actions, if indeed she's ever released. There's one other thing about this story that really, really disturbs me. Now, I'm not a religious person in any way, shape or form, but I really struggle with the lack of respect shown to Phoenix's body after the killing. Moving it around, setting fire to it, and of course cutting it up. It just isn't right, is it? It must be so upsetting for the family to hear this. But as we finish, as always, our thoughts are with the friends and family of Phoenix. Someone who had such early promise before a series of events in her life which threw her off track. But at the time of her death, it seems that she was really finding herself again, and she could be looking forward to an exciting future. But this was just snatched away by Gordon, pointlessly. I know I say this a lot, but to me it's just so poignant that there's an empty chair at all the occasions where Phoenix should have been present for the rest of her life. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of the UK True Crime Podcast. To discuss this story and any other aspects of UK True Crime, please head to Facebook and join over 93,000 of us who talk UK True Crime 24/7. And to support the show, why wouldn't you? Please do head to patreon.com/UK True Crime for bonus episodes 75 and loads of other exclusive content. This week there's a brand new competition exclusive to supporters at Patreon to win 2 backstage tickets for my upcoming show in the Northeast on the 2nd of June, that's Murder Ain't Easy. You will join me, Paul, the host of the True Crime Enthusiast podcast, and Mike from the Murder Mile podcast for drinks before the show, as well as having the 2 very best seats in the house. Just join our community for under $2 a month to be in the chance of winning those tickets. A huge thank you to the latest members of this community. That's Jane Thompson, Rosalie Besnicki, Alisa Barnes and Ross Smith. Thank you so much. Your support is much appreciated. So if you're not with us so far, please join today. And if it isn't for you, although I can't believe that for one moment, you can cancel at any time. You know it makes sense. Patreon.com/UK True Crime. Okay, so that's all from me, the host of the UK's 37th most popular true crime podcast, aspiring to the giddy heights of 36, in the same way that the Mighty Leeds United aspire to win just one more point this season, please. So until we speak again, please do take it easy and remember, despite all the others, it's always the others, stay classy. Cheerio for now.